all spread your wings, close your eyes, let your love flow, come inside, spread your wings, close your eyes, let your love flow.
It is time for a weekly visit from our favorite social, political, and metaphysical commentator, Les Visible. He writes several blogs right around the globe that expresses reality as it is seen from beyond that smoky mirror of spin and deception, with a style and candor that cuts deep, separating, as it were, the bone from the marrow. And here at Feet the Fire, we experience the audio edition with the powerful poetic delivery of his written message, with a style that you will love or hate, depending upon your desire to be alive and awaken to the light of truth, or remain asleep in the darkness of delusion. Let's take a trip across the pond to somewhere in Europe, and this week's comments from Les Visible.
Aroo! Greetings and genuflections aplenty from the House of Visible, hovering in the saucer pod above the Rainbow Bridge. The time of resonance is upon us, and the time of dissonance is upon some. Some are awakening, some are still dreaming, and some are still asleep. We soldier on as we must, and in God we trust. Everyone else is living on credit cards and a belief in the system, or something. And a belief in something. And all things will prove to be what they are. Sold American 93 slimy-eyed senatorial centipedes group groped together to shoehorn military law into your domestic police force with all the implications that attend it. Appropriately, Black Friday gun sales broke the house record. Yes, folks, gun sales were the greatest over this last weekend than they've ever been. This pièce de draconia was birthed from the backdoor wombs of a Zio-Nazi Carl Levin and I got chipmunks in my cheek, John McCain. McCain looks like someone who's been using a bicycle pump in his rear end. He'd better pull over to the curb and let some of the air out of his head before he explodes. Or maybe he'll soon look like a runaway float from the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. It slithered through the House of Representatives under orders from Tel Aviv. Boy, they must have quite a video library of weird hinky-dinks to hold over the heads of those who sold their souls for a temporary position in the material world. I always figured it was pointless to paint yourself as upright and rigidly moral if you weren't intending to be, because that just gives the power of darkness the power over you through fear of exposure. I always figured the best route to take was that of an immoral drug ingester who couldn't abide Wonder Bread rules and just followed the footprints of the masters even if he couldn't always see straight. And sometimes went in the wrong direction. Should I ever get powerful or rich and famous, I wouldn't have to worry about people finding out whether I did this or that, because it's already presumed I did, or been inferred that I did, even if I never did. It comes with the territory. That's the big trap in expensive suit land. You got your front, you got your back, and they are not in sync. Now, they are not the same. An affront depends on the back being hidden. So it stands to reason that certain elements would turn this dynamic to their advantage. Those steeped in deceit with the souls of blackmailers and the cold efficiency of lawyers. In times of darkness, many of the higher vocations, maybe all of them, are corrupt. The priesthoods are dens of depravity. The doctors are hacks. You can't practice any of these things in their intended fashions because effective healing is against the law. And finding God is prohibited because it leads to all kinds of mischief, like ideas of free expression, laughter, and dancing. Well, laughing's all right as long as you're laughing at the wrong things, and dancing's all right as long as it looks awkward and turns into either a performance of concealment or an expression of devotion toward a high-end item that you can't afford. They got to keep those treadmills turning. Whoa, yeah. They got to keep those special fires, yeah, burning. Oh, those fires of unfortunate desires burning until the thing that winds up in the ashes is you. Oh, ain't that cold? No, it's hot. Yeah, that's all I got. My friends, we are at that moment that can best be expressed by Lewis Carroll as he walks on the beach with the walrus and the carpenter. The sun was shining on the sea, shining with all his might. He did his very best to make the billows smooth and bright. And this was odd, because it was the middle of the night. The moon was shining sulkily, because she thought the sun had got no business to be there. After all, the day was done. It's very rude of him, she said, to come and spoil the fun. The sea was as wet could be. Sands were dry as dry. You could not see a cloud. Well, because no cloud was in the sky. No birds were flying overhead. There were no birds to fly. The walrus and the carpenter were walking close at hand. They wept like anything to see such quantities of sand. If this were only cleared away, they said, it would be grand. If seven maids with seven mops swept it for half a year, do you suppose, the walrus said, that they could get it clear? I doubt it, said the carpenter, and shed a bitter tear. Oh, oysters, come and walk with us, the walrus did beseech. A pleasant walk, a pleasant talk along the briny beach. We cannot do with more than four to give a hand to each. The eldest oyster looked at him, but never a word he said. The eldest oyster winked his eye and shook his heavy head, meaning to say he did not choose to leave the oyster bed. But four young oysters hurried up, all eager for the treat. Their coats were brushed, their faces washed, their shoes were clean and neat. And this was odd, because, you know, they hadn't any feet. Four other oysters followed them, and yet another four. And thick and fast they came at last, and more and more and more, all hopping through the frothy waves and scrambling to the shore. The walrus and the carpenter walked on a mile or so, and then they rested on a rock conveniently low, and all the little oysters stood and waited in a row. The time has come, the walrus said, to talk of many things, of shoes and ships and sealing wax of cabbages and kings, and why the sea is boiling hot, and whether pigs have wings. But wait a bit, the oysters cried, because before we have our chat, for some of us are out of breath, and all of us are fat. No hurry, said the carpenter. They thanked him much for that. A loaf of bread, the walrus said, is what we chiefly need. Pepper and vinegar, besides, are very good indeed. Now, if you're ready, oysters, dear, we can begin to feed. But not on us, the oysters cried, turning a little blue. After such a kindness, that would be a dismal thing to do. The night is fine, the walrus said. Do you admire the view? It was so nice of you to come, and you are very nice. The carpenter said nothing but, cut us another slice. I wish you were not quite so deaf. I've had to ask you twice. It seems a shame, the walrus said, to play them such a trick. After we brought them out so far and made them trot so quick, the carpenter said nothing but, the butter's spread too thick. I weep for you, the walrus said. I deeply sympathize. With sobs and tears he sorted out those of the largest size, holding his pocket handkerchief before his streaming eyes. Oh, oysters, said the carpenter, you've had a pleasant run. Shall we be trotting home again? But answer came there none. And this was scarcely odd, because they'd eaten every one. Well, and so it goes. And I guess that's the metaphor. And so there you go, and here we are. Or will be. I'm headed for a beach with no ocean. I think they call that a desert. The problem is that certain people manipulate the interface between the divine and humanity, and you get commerce instead of enlightenment. Then you get dupes instead of aware people, and you get people reaching for something instead of people reaching with something. Self-reliance is a primary expression of self-awareness. I've never paid much attention to Gurdjieff. It was a little dense and compressed for my tastes. I'm not knocking him. I just don't need as much furniture in my room as he does. But there are many, many rooms in this cosmic apartment building. He did say one thing that I approve of, though. He said that no man should call himself a master before he is able to take care of 30 other people besides himself. That struck a chord with me. Masters are industrious, and they are inventive. They get things done. Sometimes they do it without seeming to do much at all. I had this friend who was a pastry chef. His name was Tom. I was working on Paradise Fruits on Maui, where I was the Dalai Lama. One day I walked into this Italian bistro, and I saw these cakes in the display case, and I asked the guy behind the counter about the baker, and he told me that, hey, he's fantastic, but he's not happy here. I told him, give me a call. We're looking for a baker. I didn't tell him that, though. So he came over, and Roger, the guy that owned Paradise Fruits, heard about it. He wanted $15 an hour cash, which isn't much, I didn't think. He got quite uncertain, and I said, Roger, hire the guy. Trust me. He did. I would go out to the baking section sometimes and watch him. It wasn't moving fast at all, but incredible things started appearing all over the place and walked out the door as soon as they hit the shelves. The guy was unbelievable. Sometimes I'd do the baking, you know, on off days, and I was flying around the place and getting flour all over myself and whatnot, and I never came anywhere near his output. And forget the quality. He went to the Culinary Institute of New York. Coincidentally, I used to live near there when I was in Woodstock. We called it the CIA. Then he went to the Sorbonne and studied with some of the world's best pastry chefs. I looked a lot like Michael Jackson. I really liked him. He was a gay guy, and he died of AIDS. I'll always remember him. I considered him a friend, and I I believe he felt that way about me too. I must have had a point in saying that. Hopefully it came across. Hopefully there's been a point in what I've been discussing this evening with you and getting ready for my little journey and excursion into the cosmos, whatever that is. And taking off on a wing and a prayer, and probably see some of you there. Yeah, it feels pretty good from where I'm at here this evening. And I hope you're all resonating, and I hope some of you are doing those little routines and getting some success at them. I truly do. Anyway, it is now officially time for me to go. Ow. So, I'll see you next week, if there is one. In the meantime, may you find the light within, and may it be a candle in the window. Put a candle in the window. Yeah, may it be a candle in the window on your journey home. Hare Krishna! Aloha! And
Feet to Fire is a production of IPS Media Works on the OnSIC Radio Network of Stations.